We continue today to take your calls and questions on the coronavirus with area health experts. What do you want to know? What questions do you have? Where do you need clarification? What are your concerns? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK or tweet us at Radio Boston. With us on the line today, returning, is Dr. Helen Boucher, Chief of the Division of Geographic Medicine and Infectious Diseases at Tufts Medical Center. She's also Treasurer of the Infectious Diseases Society of America. Thanks for being with us again, Dr. Boucher.
Thank you so much for having me.
And also with us today is Julia Marcus, an infectious disease epidemiologist and assistant professor at Harvard Medical School. Welcome to Radio Boston, Julia.
Thanks for having me.
So I want to ask, as people, I think anxiety is dialing up, and as our callers begin to call in, let me ask Dr. Boucher, what would a course of symptoms look like for a person who may wonder if they just have a runny nose or if they are experiencing the coronavirus?
Oh, that's a great question, Tiziana, and I agree wholeheartedly that tensions are running high the last few days. The symptoms of the COVID virus are often similar to a common cold. And if you have those type of symptoms, it's really important that you stay home and take care of yourself. What we want to hear from you is when you have worsening symptoms, like a worse cough, a fever that's persistent, chest pain, difficulty breathing, those type of things would bring you to the hospital. We also see some patients who have stomach symptoms, and there's been a little news the past few days about a funny sense of taste or smell, and many people also have muscle aches.
And how different is that from the flu?
You know, it's really often not that different from the flu. This is a flu-like illness, but I think one thing that's, it is different from seasonal allergies. It's different from a simple cold often. Most of the people that we've seen feel crummy, and they're pretty clear that they feel crummy.
And Julia Marcus, I had a listener write me earlier today and say, so often people say, if you're experiencing X, then call your doctor. What if you don't have a doctor? Who do you call?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends where you are, but the CDC has resources in terms of who to contact. And certainly if you're having trouble breathing, I would recommend calling 911. That would definitely constitute an emergency situation.
Let's start taking some calls. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Jan is on the line from Provincetown. Hello, Jan.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
Yes, I've been getting information from others, either via text or Facebook. I don't listen to Facebook much. But the question I have is, they're sending out information that if we drink hot liquids, if we drink hot water, if we drink hot tea, if we drink anything really hot, that will help protect us, and not to drink anything cold. So I'm having a hard time with understanding that that could be accurate, but I'm not a doctor.
Well, let's find out, because Helen Boucher is a doctor. So Dr. Boucher, what's your response to what Jan's been reading or hearing on social media?
Yeah, you know, I'm not familiar with those data, so I'm not aware that there's any benefit to drinking particularly hot versus cold liquids. So I think it's important to stay hydrated and well-nourished, but I'm not aware of any information about the temperature of what you drink.
And Julia Marcus, as an infectious disease expert, it must be familiar to you to hear people saying, I'm trying to figure out what to believe in the information I'm reading on the internet. What's your advice for people today when, in fact, they are secluded and most of their information is coming at them through their social media channels and through the internet?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's a lot of misinformation out there. And the problem with social media, a great thing about it is that it's a great source of good information, but it can also very quickly spread misinformation. And so in terms of understanding ways to protect ourselves from infection, our best source of information right now is the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. So go to cdc.gov and trust what information you find there, and question your sources when you're reading information on social media. Make sure that somebody is at least has some expertise in the area. And again, CDC is really your best source of information right now.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Dean is on the line from Brookline. Dean, go ahead.
Hi. I was inspired, not by the president, of course, but by other politicians like Bernie Sanders saying, what can we do to help as citizens? And I have a CPAP machine, which, you know, is used to help you breathe. It provides air at night. And I'm wondering if people should be donating those since there's a ventilator shortage. Is that kind of machine something that can, in a pinch, as a backup, help at all?
Okay, thanks for that question, Dean. Dr. Boucher, is it possible to repurpose something like a CPAP machine in a ventilator shortage?
Well, that's such a great question, and it's so heartwarming, really, that you're willing to give up your own therapy for somebody else. The information that we have so far doesn't suggest that a CPAP machine would be able to, you know, serve the purpose of a ventilator. What's called a BiPAP machine might, and there are calls for equipment. And many hospitals and also MassBio are collecting a variety of equipment. So if you had other equipment that you were interested in donating or any of the personal protective equipment that we need, that would be so much appreciated. Thank you so much.
And I do want to ask you and follow up, Dr. Boucher. We heard some interesting exchanges just today, for example, with New York Governor Andrew Cuomo about availability of ventilators. He was responding to FEMA, who offered to send some, saying, that's not enough. How concerned are you about the supply or availability of ventilators in our healthcare facilities here in the Commonwealth?
Well, I think we're all concerned about the supply of a number of precious resources, and ventilators are one of those. And that's really the reason that we've been so, loud in the message of the importance of all these mitigation measures like social distancing and all the things that are disrupting our lives right now. The purpose of doing all this is so that the healthcare system doesn't become overwhelmed with a number of patients all at once who need things like ventilators. So we are all planning for the ability to care for as many patients as once as we can, but we're really emphasizing, and I want to make sure the listeners understand the importance of sticking with this program of social distancing and all the other disruptive things that are happening in our lives to help prevent us from getting to the situation where we're overwhelmed in the need for things like ventilators.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Jennifer from Cambridge. Hi, Jennifer.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
My call is kind of two-part, but it just is about the process of, like, when we do go out for fresh air and we come home, is the mail a risk? And am I supposed to take off my clothes and shoes and wash them and take a shower?
Great questions, Jennifer. Julia Marcus, what do we know about the level of sort of wash and self-protection at home that people need to practice?
That is a great question. As far as we know, the most likely way to become infected is by close contact with somebody who's infected. So just going out on a walk and not touching anything and not coming within 6 feet of anybody is really, you're not really at risk in that situation. In terms of your question around mail and bringing anything into your house, like a package or grocery delivery, again, it's fairly low risk, but in that case, it is possible that if somebody were sick and were delivering a package to you and had just sneezed on their hands and picked up the package and then you grabbed it, you know, it's within the realm of possibility that you could, there could be transmission in that situation. But I think the best thing to do is anytime you bring anything new into your house, or if you go outside and you actually touch things or interact with people, definitely wash your hands and try not to touch your face and kind of use those same precautions that you normally would. But I do think just going out on a walk is, you're really not at risk.
Let's go to Judith now in Dover, New Hampshire. Hello, Judith.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call.
Yes, please.
Okay. Yes. Okay, so my husband is a travel nurse, and he's working at Portsmouth Hospital right now. There are some virus cases there. He has underlying conditions. I am concerned about the equipment and stuff they have at the hospital. But also, I am concerned about people who have fibromyalgia, lupus, multiple sclerosis, things like that. And I can't find anything on the internet about stuff like that.
Dr. Boucher, any thoughts for Judith?
Well, so Judith, I think that, we're still learning a lot about this virus, but we know from the experience in other countries that people with underlying conditions and people who are over 60 seem to be more at risk of having complications and more difficulty with managing this infection. So, you know, in those people, we want to be extra vigilant in terms of all of our preventative measures. And your husband, who's a nurse, is well-versed on the importance of things like washing his hands and using the protective equipment appropriately. And so I think, you know, just vigilance with that is the most important thing for him. And for other people not working in healthcare, following the mitigation measures like social distancing, and those things are the most important measures they can take to protect themselves from the virus.
1-800-423-8255 to join the conversation here. That's 1-800-423-TALK to ask questions of our panel of medical experts. Dave is on the line from Dedham. Dave, go ahead.
Hi. You know, the WHO this morning said that the cases of coronavirus in the United States has risen a lot more than anywhere else in the world. Is that more a matter that we're testing a lot more and the people we're really testing are probably already sick because that's one of the criteria for testing people? And is that the number we should be looking at, total number of cases, or should we be looking at instead number of people hospitalized or number of people who have died as a better indicator of what's going on as far as when it might be safe to go back into the water?
Great questions, Dave. Let's turn to Julia Marcus.
That is a great question. There is so much we don't know because we're not testing widely. So you really bring up a great point that just looking at the number of diagnosed cases or the number who have been hospitalized or the number of deaths doesn't really give us that denominator, the number of people who've been tested. And testing also varies by state, by jurisdiction, and certainly by country. So it's pretty hard to compare across countries or states or cities. And as testing increases, and then in some cases, like in New York, is kind of slowing down or at least being focused in healthcare settings, the number of cases is going to vary based on that. And so to try to answer your question, you know, we need to kind of take all of these data points into consideration, but I think we still have a lot more to learn about the kind of global epidemiology of what's happening right now.
Mary's on the line from Marshfield. Mary, go ahead.
Well, I just have a question. I don't hear anybody talking about all the vape users and cigarette smokers or tobacco users or even marijuana users. I would think that they might be more at risk.
So let's ask Dr. Boucher that. Thanks, Mary. Dr.
Yes.
Boucher.
Yeah, it's a great point, Mary. And we know from the epidemic in China, the data that we have coming out of China, that people who smoked did more poorly with the virus. So I think it's very rational to be concerned about the lungs of people who vape and smoke, for sure. And we're going to learn more about the face of the epidemic here in the United States with those habits as we understand more. But it's a very reasonable concern.
Julia Marcus, I want to turn to you a question that came up earlier today after Governor Charlie Baker talked about the need to flatten the curve and practice social distancing, just really to make sure we don't overwhelm our hospital system. Is social distancing and our need to practice it at a large scale right now directly related to our ability to handle a surge of patients? And if we have a scaled up healthcare system, will social distancing become less necessary, or are they, you know, sort of both parts of a value chain that both have to be in place?
Yeah, that's kind of a million-dollar question right now. I think it's absolutely clear that social distancing is needed right now to mitigate that surge on the healthcare system that you're talking about. I think it's a little less clear how we're going to come out of this and when. And certainly we need to focus on not just flattening the curve, but people are also starting to talk about raising the bar or raising the capacity of the healthcare system to handle larger numbers of patients. So I think over the next weeks and months, we're going to have to think carefully about how to kind of re-enter society and whether that's going to be staged with younger people starting to go back to work first. I think we really need to think about those public health measures and be increasing the capacity of the healthcare system at the same time.
So, Dr. Boucher, we don't have time to go to another caller, but we did have a caller who wanted to know how concerned they should be about the toxicity of products that are being recommended as being effective for home cleaning, things with bleach and other chemicals in them.
Oh, that's a great question. And, you know, one thing that the CDC has been very clear about is that the standard products that we use to clean are effective against this virus. So I don't think you need to go more crazy than you usually do about cleaning. You just might want to do it more often. And to harken back to your earlier question, we also know from the CDC that washing your clothes in the usual way you wash your clothes in the washing machine is fine for your clothes should they have been affected by the virus as well.
All right. Dr. Helen Boucher of Tufts Medical Center and Julia Marcus of the Harvard Medical School, thanks to both of you. I appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.